My microphone is interesting. It's going to make me feel like I'm not talking to anybody because my headphones are not turned up. The news this week from the Kinks. Dave Davies on the talking with aliens. And that's one of the things that I think is so fascinating. There's so many musicians who have seen, heard, spoken, been influenced by ET aliens, whatever you want to call it. And so I'm immediately going into seeing if some of the music is influenced by that. And it sure is. And the whole time, you know, you have no idea. This is coming from a real experience. And so they do the interview with him, and it's on Vulture. Anyway, talking about what triggered it. And he says, well, too much drugs and drinking. Okay, that was pretty much it. Okay, well, there you go. Now we get past that part, all right? And it doesn't mean that's required. Hi there, I'm Wendy. This is Wendy's Coffee House. My guest tonight is going to be the author of Messengers, Owl Synchronicity and the UFO Abductee. Okay, Mike Cleland coming up. Anyway, that was the trigger for his experience. And he said it was just an amazing thing because what happened, the revelation as a part of that, and he remembers 1982 out-of-body experience. He said he was out-of-body and having an inner-body experience at the same time with other intelligences. And he said it was just, you know, as real as you and I sitting here together. And he said probably even more so. So that's what's a cool thing. And they said, well, so what kind of impact did you remember? Was there anything important that you got? And he said, well, the most interesting thing was it came through smell. And it was the impact of that sense of smell that left him with, a huge, you know, revelation and a shift. So anyway, he said, you know, you couldn't talk about this stuff in the 80s, and now it's a little easier, and that helps. That helps. So anyway, Dave Davies on the Kinks and the alien communication. It says his brother's he's interested too, but he said he has to be careful because you talk about it too much and people get frightened. All right, this is the coffee bomb. If you have not heard about this stuff, the newest one that is out is called Black Insomnia. And this is the world's strongest coffee. And they haven't burnt the beans, but what they do is they make it super caffeinated, dangerously high. All right, you need a doctor's, well, I don't know. They do say naturally high caffeinated products without any additives. In the meantime, though, when you're talking, this is like 702 megs per cup, 12 ounce. And but it also has a nice walnut and almost sweet taste profile. So immediately I went to see what else was out there to see, you know, if there's a whole bunch of coffee that's really super, super strong. And there's another one that I decided, well, I could put this on my website, Death Wish Coffee. And this stuff isn't cheap, okay, but it has the 660, it should have been 666, okay, but it's 660 milligrams of caffeine. And so they put these dangerous, safe amount, not really. So if you want to stay up all night, they said, I think one of them, Death Insomnia, is Black Insomnia, says who needs sleep? Yeah. Why sleep? Sleeping is cheating. Or sleep is cheating. You can hashtag that on Twitter and find it. But I thought, well, that's going to go on the, I'm going to put that on the blog. You know, you do affiliate marketing and all that stuff on blogs. Been doing this, 10, 15 years blogging. And finally, it's now getting fun or interesting. Just a whole lot more stuff out there. In the news, too, which is, this is kind of a coincidence, synchronicity, however you want to refer to it. There's a mention in the book that Mike talks about with the owls of this eye, and he makes a little aside to that. And there's this huge celestial eye hovering over a city in Russia, and they've got a video picture of it. This is fascinating. It does. It looks like a giant eye. And the close-up doesn't do it as much justice as a faraway look, but they said that a lot of people saw this, and they think it's over this, you know, over the city, and they've seen other things there before. They had, I think, meteor showers and stuff like that, and shockwave, and then about 1,500 people had to have medical treatment after that one. So they have exciting things going on there, and that's, you know, one of those really spooky things, because when he talks about it in the book, and here it is this week, just a little bit ahead of all that, it's kind of cool. Neil deGrasse Tyson and Brian Cox have just decided that the Large Hadron Collider proves that ghosts don't exist. They had a conversation about this. Physic Astronomy is on the it's on the website, and they're talking about how you know if it was going to be proved, then that was our best hope, and so it somehow because that didn't happen, that means that they don't exist. Now, the fine print is they're proving stuff that happens in our dimension. Now, do we know if we can see things from other dimensions? Not sure yet. I guess we'll have to figure that out. But right now, they are kind of saying and alluding to. I don't know if Tyson is doing that because he says he's had experience with interesting, haunting kinds of things. And so he has empathy, sympathy for people who do see ghosts. And right now, I think they would lose their credibility if they said they did. But we would certainly be thrilled if they were at least a little bit more open-minded. And the Twitter hot dog of the week, the one that's just making everybody go crazy, is the cats ringing a bell and getting treats. This is absolutely everywhere. I saw it Friday morning and had at that point, it was, you know, only maybe 50,000 or 100,000. And it's gone like millions by now. So if you have not yet seen it, we'll post that on the blog for you and you can enjoy it. In the meantime, I am looking forward to talking with Mike about owls. And if you've ever seen an owl, this will make you think twice. There might be something more going on with just a few other things that are under the radar because they look so innocuous and so safe, and it's just an owl. Or is it? Mike Lellin, my guest, The Messengers, Owls, Synchronicity, and the UFO Abductee. Coming up on Wendy's Coffee House. Okay, there's musical chairs. I can hear me. I can hear the music fine. I just can't figure out which microphone's working. So they've had funky problems with the mics in the studio, and one of them is like super, super low level, and that's always the one I find, okay? And it's that. Then we switch to the other one for the actual loud level, and it sometimes works. And then I have no headphones. So in the meantime, I have to, you know, play hopscotch here and figure out what to do. Fortunately, I've got a good guest to back me up, and he's used to having all sorts of weird and synchronistic kinds of things happening. This, I thought, was interesting tonight, and I'll get into it after we introduce my guest, Mike. The Messengers, Owls, Synchronicity, and the UFO Abductee. This is a fascinating book. Rave reviews on Amazon. And if you haven't, if you have had an owl experience, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you haven't yet, well, then don't be surprised if you do. Hi, Mike. Thank you for
Hello.
Talking with me.
You're very welcome.
Did you go skiing today?
I sure did.
That's what I thought. I thought I saw that, and I was like, man, that looks so fun. Out there in the beautiful white open, and no falling, right?
We were cross-country skiing in the wonderful mellow terrain and along the edges of lakes and things like that. So it was pretty darn tranquil and lovely, yes.
Gorgeous.
Wasn't at all, no high speeds.
No traumatic.
No trauma at all. Nothing but
smiles. I wanted to ask you, in the book, when you're talking about some of this stuff, there's a point where you mention you think maybe there's a metal eye. There's a person who shared an experience with you, and she doesn't really call it a UFO experience, but she talks about an eye, something looking at her through the bedroom window. Okay, I'm going to leave it right there for now, and let's go ahead and get into your book and your stories, but I have to say it before I lose it, all right, because I can get distracted easily, but it's a little hit with some of the content you have in your book. How did you get started with the owl thing? Because that's what you're known for now.
Well, the owl thing happened completely. It was a real life experience. I mean, to tell it completely would take a few hours, but to tell it, I had a handful of very powerful synchronistic owl experiences in 11 years ago now, so that would have been 2006. And at that moment, at that time, leading up to those owl sightings, which I detail at the very beginning of the book, I had been at the point where I realized I needed to look into my own UFO experiences. They certainly played out like UFO contact experiences. I recognize that, but I was not going there. I was in a complete state of denial. And I will have to say that it was those owls, those owl sightings, repeated owl sightings. I knew intuitively and that this had something to do with the UFOs, and I had to go and dig into my experiences. And as I went along and I spoke to UFO researchers and experiencers and people who've had the direct contact, you know, experience in their life, I would ask everyone the same question. I said, have you ever had any odd experiences with owls? And it wasn't 100%. That would be incorrect, but it was enough that I was left with a very clear pattern that owls, for reasons I can only dance around the edges at because I don't truly know, but owls, I am convinced, play some part in the grand UFO experience. It's a small part, but so I decided, I figured, oh, I'll write a little thing. I'll write a little, you know, magazine-length kind of essay and just post it online. I did that. But what happened was I just ended up with so much stuff that it turned into a big sort of, you know, a big book.
A giant book.
It's a big, heavy book. Yes, you can hold the door open with that book.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's that. We like that. The other thing, too, Richard Dolan, at the intro of your book, he says, when somebody's deeply asleep, whispering won't wake them. Sometimes you have to really shake them. And if that doesn't work, send in the owls.
Yes, actually, I said that. He was quoting me.
So, oh, he's quoting you?
Yes, he was quoting. It's in quotes. It's me. We had a long talk about
that. Oh, yeah. Okay. Mike believes. Okay. Mike believes. That's the intro. Yeah. I think it's fascinating because I've had my own experiences. I had a friend who kept quizzing me because the owls kept coming to nest in her yard. She says, I think they're UFOs. I think they're talking. And I think, you know, so anyway.
Let's hear the story. This is what I do. I talk to people who have these accounts. So.
Okay. Well, she was hearing more things and it seemed to be a connection with the ETs. And she said, she thought, I can't divulge too much because this is a private story, but that was her thing, was that she could hear them, and the more she connected with the owls, the more she seemed to be able to hear. All right, and so that was for her kind of a light bulb of these things are going on. From that, I had an experience with my husband in 2009 when we went to an event down in Texas, and we were only supposed to be there for a certain amount of time. And before we went to the event, we looked up and there's this huge white owl, incredibly large white owl flying above us. And I've never had that kind of experience with an owl at all, but it was related to going to that event, which was a ET UFO conference there in Texas. And I just blogged about it.
And let me just ask, so how many UFO conferences had you been to at that point?
None. Zero.
So you were... Now, to describe this thing, and I'm completely asking leading questions, and I know it, but so the owl, described the direction the owl was flying?
Okay, I believe...
In relation to your car?
We were walking outside, and I believe we were going south, and the owl was going north, crossing... Husband's sitting here, he says, no, it was the other way around, so we have a different memory of it. He remembers different memory. And that's not unusual.
So you're walking. Okay. Oh, that's very interesting.
We were out walking.
Okay. Yeah, pay attention. So you're attending your very first UFO conference. It's now, one of the things in the book, there's a woman who claims to channel owls, among other things. And she's an animal communicator and does very normal kind of animal communication stuff where she helps people with, like, you know, sick puppies and stuff like that, and she has channeled an owl while standing in the woods looking at an owl, and she asked, you know, like, what's, you know, and the answer that came to her, you know, why the owls are here is to announce initiation, which I think is a great, I don't know if this is true or not, but it's a great phrase to announce initiation, so that matches completely what you, not completely, I'm you know, that is a nice, clean fit for your experience.
Well, I think for one thing, I was going to do a story on it, and that was why I was going. It wasn't that I felt comfortable about going to a UFO ET conference. I just thought I need to be here, and this is the best way for me to get information. And then, since I also trust my own gut on that, I was only supposed to stay a certain amount of time, and I did. And if at my clue that I was supposed to leave was I was trying to take pictures of the people who were taking pictures of the people who were there. When I turned my camera on those people, my eyes started burning and watering and tearing up, and I knew, okay, now I'm leaving.
Oh, interesting.
So it got interesting from just that initial owl thing of feeling like, okay, there's something else going on here I don't know about, but I seem to be having a joint experience. I thought it was fascinating. So aside from that, though, I noticed everybody who went there, or a lot of the people who went there, smoked. And I thought it was interesting. Later on, somebody told me most people who see UFOs either are out walking their dog or they're smoking. And they're the higher number of people who report the UFOs because they're the ones out looking at the sky and everybody else doesn't.
That's very interesting. Yeah, and I've heard this a lot. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, like, oh, I went out to the back porch for a smoke and that's when I saw the UFO. Yeah. And, But that doesn't necessarily, now at the same time, you know, the UFO, so people have the direct contact experience, have every right to be sort of shaky and nervous. You know?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, so people have these lifelong contact experiences. You know, you get to talking to them, and it seems like you're talking to, like, it's a little bit like talking to a shattered, you know, combat veteran in a way. There's a palpable sense that something has happened in their lives.
And you talk about a lot of this in the book, different types of encounters with the owls. Now, I wanted to get back into the eye thing. There was a sighting this week in Russia over the city, and it's the way that clouds, the light reflects off the clouds. It looks like a giant eye. And you talk about, in the book, there's a woman who shares with you her experience where she thought somebody was looking, watching her through the window, and but it was metal, and it told her not to be afraid because it was metal, and
so the woman, and she's a girl, and she's lying in bed, and she's kind of looking out the window, and the way the window is situated, I think there's like is careening in from the heavens, like this thing goes, and then this attaches to the window, and I said, like, wait a minute, I can't follow this. You have to draw this. Can you draw this? And she sent me an illustration, and it looks like a old, like, gooseneck lamp with a suction cup connected to the window, and the lamp thing is a giant sphere about the size, seemingly, of, I don't know, like 8 or 9 inches across, and it's basically this camera-like, not like an eyeball, like a gruesome eyeball in a horror movie,
right,
but more like a camera eye. And it blinks with this little shutter, and she's freaking out telepathically in her mind. She hears the voice, you know, don't be afraid. I am only a friendly owl, which is not an owl, right? It's completely not an owl.
No, not from the description I see here in the book.
Mechanical thing with a camera eye peering in at this little girl. And then eventually it just detached from the window and jettisoned off into the heavens again. And this woman has also had a handful of other very odd and unusual experiences, including some psychic experiences and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, was just like this, you know, you would think that, how to say it, you know, how to, so one fellow said one time about writing fiction, he said, writing fiction is hard because it has to make sense.
Yes.
Now, I wasn't writing fiction. I was just delivering the accounts of many people, including some of the accounts in the book on my own, and just telling them as best I could, you know, what they'd experienced. And it does not make sense. It's very absurd and surreal and strange. And that is the overriding, that's what I come away with, is that these things are confounding in a way that nobody would make up. Nobody would make that up and send that to you know, like, contact me and tell me that story if they made it up. They would try to make it logical. The story is not logical. So in a way, that's proven, that's sort of a form of proof for me when people tell me these illogical stories.
Well, and that it's helpful because when you look at the illustration in the book, it's just mind-boggling. Okay, she has a very descriptive, she's about 5 years old when this happened, a very, very clear imprint of what this looked like and how it told her it was completely something different. We're going to have to take a break. Okay, Mike Clellan is my guest. The book, The Messengers, Owl Synchronicity and the UFO Abductee. There are lots of different stories in here, and some of them may not even be UFO related, but they have an owl, and then they have a question mark as to whether they are, as you put it, like a maybe experiencer. Okay, so hang on. We're going to come right back, and we're going to talk about what happens when people see these things, and there'll be like five or six people, and they'll say, oh, look, it's the alien. The other guy, no, it's an owl. It's an owl. Why are you afraid? How come some people don't see them, even when everybody else is standing right there, and they all see the same thing? We'll see if Mike can answer. In the meantime, if you have an owl in your life, start paying more attention, okay? Because the owl might be trying to get you to do something, like go to an ET conference. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO. There's a starman waiting in the sky. Little David Bowie there. Another UFO experiencer. My guest is the author of The Messengers, Owl Synchronicity and the UFO Abductee, Mike Leland. And this is just such a fascinating, I think, prospect that there are so many more things that are involved in this, whether it's ET, UFO, abduction experience, that we're just now beginning to make some kind of a connection and drawing lines. And in the book, you talk about the owls and shamanism. And that's one of my favorite parts of the book because it gets into a whole lot, a deeper aspect of this. And before we went to the break, I talked about how some people, you know, you can have six or seven in a group and there will be, the majority will see the ET. And then one person will say, I see an owl, or at least that's one of the ones you talked about in the book. And I know this is something that we have issues with. Some people will be present for the same event and have a different outcome. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Very much so. Yes, very much so. There's an account of people who, it's actually a super creepy account where this woman and her kids and her boyfriend at the time go to like hang out and do star watching. Just go to a pretty lake and it's in Canada and they look up at the sky and then they all at the same time say, you know, I'm tired. I'm really sleepy. And they all go to the car and fall asleep. Boom, like parked car. They just walk from this little field in this park by the lake, and then they get in the car and they all fall asleep. And then they all come to. They all feel kind of sick, actually. And when they're driving back down this lonely road, back to the little small town in Canada, they turn a corner, and there, standing at the edge of the road, it, like all of a sudden, the three women, the woman and her two daughters, are screaming, and they're freaking out. And then the guy's like, what are you screaming at? And it's like, there's an alien on the side of the road. We just passed it. He said, that wasn't an alien. That was an owl. Mm-hmm. Now that's perfect, right? So that's got the absolute blending of. And then I will also say this woman, Corina Sables, has written a book, and she's been very open about her own experiences. Has some very dark, frightening experiences, but this is a perfect example of this blending of, like, you know, of this owl UFO thing. Now, I, honestly, when writing the book, you get immersed in this stuff, which I did in the writing of the book, and I literally would type, you know, owl and UFO both have three letters. I mistyped them 1,000 times in the writing of the book, where I would be describing one thing and I would be writing the wrong, I would be actually typing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's easy to get caught up in it. And then, you know, you're actually getting information. I think what I'm alluding to is the earlier Ray Davies of the Kinks was saying that they said, what was the most information, the most unique or unusual impact that you had? And from his ET encounter, and he said, well, I got it in smell. It came to me in smells. And I thought, yeah, everybody relates differently. For him, that was a very profound experience because he got information in scent. And the stuff that comes through in your book, there was a lady in here that you talked about who was an NDE. You had a near-death experience, and then she also had a UFO abduction, I think, abduction or UFO experience. And I thought, that's just, you know, a lot of times this is, once you've had these kinds of mind shifts and, you know, basically you're getting like a bat to the forehead going, whoa, wake up. Then you start thinking and seeing things differently, and it happens so quickly. It's hard to integrate it it takes years.
Or it never happens at all. And my sense is you never properly integrate it because it's you're dealing with something, I'm going to say just something beyond our realm. You know, that's one of the problems. You go to a UFO conference and one person will tell you a very earnest, powerful story, and I just get swept up in it. And you walk to the next person, you start a conversation, and they'll tell you the exact opposite account, story, emotion. Everything is the opposite, and I still get swept up into it. I feel both of them are being honest.
I can't remember the name. The guy, Stan, who saw had the video of the ET outside his window. Stan
Romanek, yeah.
Yes, okay. He's one of the people that I talked to and met at that ET, at the UFO conference. And what happened, what I thought was even more interesting, was the neighbor said that once these things started happening at their house, then she also had these kinds of things going on at her house, too. So that's, you know, guilt by association.
Yeah, it doesn't follow a logical pattern. It doesn't. It should, right? You know, we want things to be tidy and logical, but it's not. It's confounding and messy. These experiences.
The woman I was talking about earlier was Suzanne Gordon in the book. Just to give you a name.
Oh yes, yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, and the other one you talked about. You talked to Joe Lules, and about the God hypothesis. UFOs.
Which is a great book. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, and the thing about what he thought was that this is basically asking us to upgrade our consciousness. I'm just condensing it.
That's a good condensing. I don't have the direct quote in front of me, and I'm paraphrasing. So, but he sees it a way a lot of other folks see it. And this is actually, in a way, I'm very cautious to say a conclusion I have in the book, because I come up with multiple ideas of what it might be. But if this was, we turn the clock back a few hundred years, and instead of, you know, sitting here at my desk, I'm in my teepee, like out in my, you know, in the village somewhere with my, you know, my tribe, in essence. Somewhere in that village would be the shaman, right? So mm-hmm. if I went through some sort of spiritual crisis and I had a question, I would ask the shaman. And the shaman goes through an initiation process, and it's my understanding that nobody, like, chooses to be a shaman, really. Like, the shaman is appointed by the elders of the tribe. It's not, I mean, this is a generalization. So, mm-hmm. And oftentimes in the shamanic initiation process, owls will show up. And so if there was a totem animal for the shaman, it would be the owl. The owl in all the world's mythologies is recognized for its night vision. So,
yes.
So an owl can fly into the darkness, and that very quickly becomes a metaphor for flying to other realms, to the land of the ancestors,
well,
the land of the gods.
Yeah, extreme stealth,
or to the land
too.
Of the UFOs.
The owl flies with no noise. So
it flies silently, mm-hmm. Yes. It flies eerily silently. So it's not just it flies silently. I've seen a lot of owls, and it's unsettling to see them flying, because you see a raven fly or any other bird fly, a pigeon fly, and it makes a loud flap, 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 flap. Owls do not. It's mm-hmm. just the way their light feathers are created, and just the way the makeup of their wings. They're an amazing animal in their stealth technology, let's say. And this is the same thing that gets reported about UFOs. UFOs fly eerily silent, you know? So there's something, I mean, just, and so the owl and the UFO itself sort of play the same role. We don't really have a mythology around owls, right? So what do we, you know, we have like at the graduation, when kids graduate from elementary school, we have a funny little, you know, owl thing that we thumbtack onto the bulletin board with a little graduation cap on it, and that goes back to the goddess Athena, the goddess of wisdom in Greek mythology. But we don't have any owl mythology. We're void of it, you know. But we do have modern mythology. So in a way, the UFO is part of our modern mythology. There's lots of UFO movies. There's lots of UFO folklore right now. It may be accurate, it may be inaccurate, but it's part of our psyche.
Mm-hmm.
And the owl, and my sense is that the owl, the UFO has taken on the role of the owl in our modern folklore.
Well, I think it's a safety with the owl, because we can identify that. We have a frame of reference. It lives in our culture. The UFO is a total enigma an anomaly, and it's you don't know what to attach to it. And it depends on who you talk to. If somebody who's had that really frightening experience, then you're going to be afraid. And if somebody else who says, well, mine was fabulous, and they told me all sorts of things about the planet, and they said we just need to clean up our act and stop being, you know, such big polluters. So there's a whole different kind of perspective given the experiencer that you're talking to. I wanted to get in the book with some of the people you talk about. Bill Hicks, I loved his perspective.
Oh, that was great. I was a joy to write that section. And the fellow, Kevin Booth, who helped me with that, had written a biography of his good close friend, Bill Hicks. Yes, Bill Hicks, a late comedian who died of cancer in the mid-90s.
Well, and I think we're going to have to take a break here real quick. I've got another break coming up. But if you could come back and just overview that one. It's a fascinating story. But we didn't have time to talk about your experience and maybe what kickstarted this, too. So that we'll give people a little bit more background. In the meantime, though, if you're listening, Hidden Experience Blogspot is the blog you can follow along here with Mike Cleland and all the research and work that he's doing with owls and beyond. In the meantime, we're going to come back and make him talk some more here on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO, my guest, Mike Cleland, the messenger's owl synchronicity and the UFO abductee. And the deal is that while he was writing this book, there's tons of synchronicities that happened in terms of owls showing up and people calling and talking about owls. And even on the website, the Hidden Experience blog that you've got, you have an owl arrives while reading about owls and UFO contact. Okay, so there's stuff going on with this. Bill Hicks, and I mentioned him because he was fascinating. He was known for speaking his mind and being just bold front out there, you know, this is larger than life. And he talks.
Yeah, so Bill had a story of taking mushrooms, took a huge heavy dose of mushrooms back on the harmonic convergence. This was in the late 80s.
Uh-huh.
And with his friend Kevin Booth, and Kevin Booth wrote about this in the biography he wrote of his friend, and then I contacted him directly and just followed up on this, while on mushrooms, they had a very powerful UFO experience where basically it felt like both of them, and they're convinced it was a hallucination. It was not a real UFO, but they had the shared experience of like being taken on board a UFO, been imparted with all kinds of grand knowledge. They both remember the same thing, and they were basically sitting in a field in Texas when all this was going on, this psychic vision. Afterwards, the Bill Hicks like incorporates this UFO kind of mind-altering vision of unity consciousness into his comedy act, and it's a little unsettling, according to to his friend Kevin, because the audience wasn't really clear where he was going with this, and it was basically him just spilling his guts and speaking his truth, and later he was diagnosed with cancer, and his friend Kevin began seeing a lot of owls, and just leading up right up and was basically like basically pleading and asking for help. He basically went into the woods and prayed to God and said, I don't want my friend to die. And the next thing that happened is he saw an owl, and his friend eventually died.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill recognized and understood the significance and the metaphor, the symbology of the owl. And so the owl is a totem of death in a lot of cultures.
Yes.
And that's what I'm finding, is that the owl shows up at the time of death. Now, Bill eventually succumbed to cancer, and his friend had follow-up UFO experiences, as well as when I was interacting with him, I basically sent him the manuscript or the chapter that was about Bill. I said, hey, can you just read through this and troubleshoot it? He got back to me, made some great changes, helped a lot in making sure that the chapter was accurate. And he also sent a little picture and said, hey, this is right outside my window as I'm typing this.
Yes.
And there's an owl on a tree branch.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I liked, was the picture that you have of the owl right there. Okay. So these things are incredibly profound. And for me, the owl also, it isn't maybe a physical death, but symbolic of a transition or transcendence into something more, a larger awareness. And I think
that would be the totem of the shaman. Exactly.
Yeah. So I think in a lot of ways, when you were talking about the story here with Bill, it was like, wow, he did. He went on up and then he was done. So it wasn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just that it was amazing, the synchronicity of the timing of that, the UFO thing, and then that experience. Ann Streber, when she's working with Whitley Strieber, and she was coming up with he was working on the communion follow-up. Mm-hmm. Follow-up of communion, and I remember seeing communion, and I finally got rid of the book because I thought, you know, this is just, I don't need to see this experience, this face in my house, even in my bookshelf when I know it's there. I don't have to see it. So I gave it away because it bothered me. I remember
I have heard that 100 times, uh-huh. Exactly word for word doing this research.
Yeah.
Not quite word for word, but yeah, people who just get so freaked out by that cover.
It's not friendly. It's not mine are friendly. They're okay, you know. That's not friendly. He's just rather disconcerting. So I just thought it was interesting with the connection. You know, all you cover a lot of territory here, and we're not going to have enough time to cover all of it. But your story too, and you do a video presentation you've got on the blog, but your own encounter. This has to be a little bit of a fuel for continuing to do your research.
Oh, God, yeah, I'm on fire. I mean, I'm just, my life is altered and changed, and I've just immersed myself in this research. And I mean, you start pulling on this thread, you know, and you would think that you would get some, and it just, the tapestry just is so dense of these experiences, not only my own, which continue in a lot of ways, but other people's also. So the final almost 30 pages of the book is kind of a culmination of my own powerful experience from 2013 where I, you know, came to terms with all this stuff. And I'll also say that I'm, like, if we turn the clock back, even just a few years ago, I was a much more nervous, anxious person. And I feel like this book, the act of putting this book together and documenting all this stuff, including my own experiences, really, like, grounded me in a way that I did not expect, you know, going through this process.
Okay. So for people who are listening, just a tease of your experience.
The culmination of the book?
Well, just what started it? How did you, what was your initial, that's what people want to know is, okay, how did...
Okay, well, so I mean, just in the short term, I mean, I've had a bunch of experiences that they might, you know, like this is a... You know, it's funny. I mean, kind of at the point where I'm bored with, like, the stories that people tell. Maybe bored is the wrong way. But, you know, so I had I'm much more fascinated by the nuanced strangeness that accompanies these experiences. Mm-hmm. But I had missing time as a boy, a profound chapter of missing time that was associated with a bright orange light in the sky. As a 30-year-old young man, I saw 5 gray aliens out my bedroom window and somehow managed to figure a way to deny that as something real and figure that it was just a dream. I no longer feel that's a dream, but at the time I had, you know, clamped it on hard. It was going through this owl research where all this stuff resurfaced. And I had an experience in 2013 where I was sleeping outside and woke up in the middle of the night. This is in southern Utah, all alone, which I do a lot. I sleep alone outside under the stars. I love it.
Yeah.
And on this hilltop, and I've since gone back to that spot, and there's nothing on that hilltop. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I woke up and I said, that looks just like a landed flying saucer on top of that hill. And I rolled over and went back to sleep. And I then woke up a few more times that night. One time, this is the symbology that shows up. There was a howling coyote right near my head. I'm looking at this round building. That's what I called it. I just kind of said, oh, someone built a house up there, a round, perfectly round building.
Mm-hmm.
That looks just like a UFO. But this coyote was howling. Now, a coyote in the lore of the Indians of that area is the trickster, right?
So, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and then another time I woke up and there was a bright light behind the bush right near me. And I was like, I wonder what that is. Each time I looked up at this round structure, I've since gone back to that same spot in southern Utah, and there's nothing on that hilltop. And if it was a round structure, it was 1.6 miles away. It would have had to have been very very large to see it as clearly as I did. And at the nighttime in the desert, there's a clarity there. So if there was a big house there, I would very clearly make it out as a house. But there's nothing there. And this event is like tied into so many other events. Another experience where I felt like I was taken from a tent at night, another experience where I was listening to an owl hooting while a very close friend of mine was walking alone just a few yards from me and saw a bright glowing orb. Mm-hmm. And so there's like an onslaught, like an avalanche, like a dam bursting of all these strange synchronistic things that are interwoven into that one experience of seeing that round structure on the hilltop. And we won't have time to go into it. So
no.
Maybe if folks are inspired, they can get the book. All of this stuff is also logged in on my website too.
Well, and this fascinating. There are tons of stories. That's the thing about it. That's why it's such a nice, big, hefty book. Okay, so it's. It's a weighty book.
I wanted to make my point. I think I overdid it. I was, I wanted to make sure that. And I will say that any story that shows up in that book, there are no one-offs. Every story in there is part of a bigger pattern. So if you're reading one story, you got to know that in my files are a handful of others that match it, maybe not exactly, but very closely in tone.
Okay. And I would suggest if you're just getting into this and curious, then do check out the blog Hidden Experience Blogspot, because that there's a lot of information. And if you have an owl story too, Mike, you're asking people to share, right?
Sure am. Yeah. And I've been collecting them and they're coming in fast and furious. And I try to do the best I can.
Are you going to do another book?
Archive them and I'm not sharing them publicly unless I get absolute, clear permission
yes.
from the person. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, are you going to do another book with this? Because it sounds like you're...
I got a follow-up book and that's making me crazy because I can't quite finish it. But it's it would be a... there were a lot of longer format stories that sort of ended up that I simply couldn't put in the book that was already too large.
Okay, perfect,
so
perfect. We got to go.
Longer format stories that are... so this follow-up book will read more like a collection of short stories rather than kind of a textbook
right.
flavor. Oh, that's the wrong way to put it. And kind of like the I was trying to prove a point in the Messengers. The second book, Owls from or Stories from the Messengers, is more just a collection of stories.
Okay, Mike, gotta go. Thank you, and we will stay in touch. Later.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Call me anytime.
See ya. Stay curious. Wendy's Coffeehouse.